Listen, I don't think of the FAA as the enemy.
This is a special report of the Aero News Network, a conversation with AOPA President and CEO Mark Baker. I'm Glenn Moyer, ANN Aerocast producer, and this special report is brought to you by Redbird Flight Simulations.
Redbird Flight Simulations is dedicated to revolutionizing flight training by designing, manufacturing, and delivering affordable and innovative flight training technologies. Each Redbird device is designed to enhance the training experience for pilots of all levels, from student to ATP. Redbird is quickly becoming the industry standard for flight training. Since Redbird introduced its revolutionary FMX in 2007, colleges, universities, and flight training operations around the world have integrated Redbird products into their curriculum. It's time to discover what Redbird can do for you. Join the migration.
Welcome to part two of our special report, a conversation with AOPA President and CEO Mark Baker. In this program, ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell continues his interview with Mark Baker about the FAA now billing organizations for its services, AOPA competing with its own industry service and product suppliers, the organization's declining membership, and more. Our conversation with Mark Baker continues. Here again is ANN's Jim Campbell.
The last year venture found the FAA billing EAA for ATC and associated services. And the FAA, for first time in many years, following on after throwing them nearly a $500,000 bill, had virtually no agency interaction with the pilot citizenship. Administrator apparently couldn't find one person in an 80,000-person agency to come and talk to the pilots one-on-one. To many, that appears that the agency has declared war on GA. What plans do you have to engage with the FAA? How has the FAA reached out to you on this? And what do you see as the most dangerous aspect, if any, in the trend exhibited by what they did with the EAA and Air Venture this year?
Listen, I don't think of the FAA as the enemy. I think of the FAA as in a mutual kind of need here to make sure that there's safety in aviation, general aviation, and certainly commercial aviation. And in these times of very significant change in terms of how the administration and how the things are going to be funded, there's just lots of uncertainty. And in meeting with them yesterday, a number of the FAA officials in terms of next gen and other future developments, I think we're all going to end up working together, and I do mean all of us in general aviation and commercial aviation with the FAA to make choices about things that we're going to have to protect to make sure that we have a future in aviation because it benefits all of us. And there are going to be certain things that they're going to have to come off the list. And right now I think they're struggling with significant budget likelihood that's going to be changing, and how do they fit into that. So I think they have as many questions as we do, and we've got to work together for the answers.
Over the last few years, AOPA has picked certain aviation vendors to partner or team with to the exclusion of other vendors and former partners. Folks that have participated in the AOPA process have been in times big sponsors, at times partners in other events. It's created quite a bit of heartburn, i.e. FlyQ competing with the Wing X's and the Four Flights of the world, and then the CFI programs competing with the Kings and a number of others. And then, of course, there's aviation insurance and the like. Does AOPA plan to continue this trend of competition with its own industry, or do you think the association has to be a bit more impartial with its vendors and not provide those competing services?
Well, I think I'll go back to the original reasons why AOPA existed in 1939, which is to advocacy, protect the freedom to fly. Those are the things that are airport access. All of these are things that I think are, our primary reasons to exist. And yet I want to review every other one of these other departments and parts of the organization to see if it makes sense from a member benefit. There's a lot of reasons, I guess, why each one of these developments occurred over the years, some good, some maybe. We've been in the insurance business for over 20 years, and I think that is a member benefit. Some of these other pieces, we're going to evaluate everything and understand where we fit in the continuum, and do we provide a really, truly better value for our members? If we don't, then we'll make a different decision.
A question that came up over and over and over again, and this goes both in the personal and professional standpoint, both as Mark Baker pilot, as well as Mark Baker, president of AOPA. What do you see as the greatest challenges then in growing GA? And where do you expect to focus your efforts initially?
Well, I talk about this grassroots thing, and I talk about this regional appeal, because I think, you know, it's wonderful that AOPA is here in near the Beltway, where we've got to protect this advocacy thing. But at the end of the day, it's the pilot and the airport and that experience, and getting that to be a positive experience, one that's safe, but one that's fun, and one that creates access to the neighborhood so people have fun going to this public domain called an airport. And that's one of the reasons why I want to really turn on the energy around, you know, having more fun at the airport through AOPA, having, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 regional events rather than having one summit, supporting in a bigger way AirVenture, which lots of people go to that, or Sun and Fun. I think that's our role, and then explaining what the value of our membership is, and making sure that we're doing everything we can, one airport at a time, to have a better experience and protect it.
Sounds like a lot of your focus is going to be airport-centric then.
That's correct.
Okay. Aviation community, when it was introduced, thought that LSA and Sport Pilot was the potential savior of aviation. No plan survives contact with reality. Cost of LSAs are far higher than anticipated. Sport Pilot license numbers out there really much smaller than what anybody expected. Many in the community point to gross weight limits and other factors that reined in the capabilities of LSA as being a major driver in the lack of acceptance and the perceived value, especially with the costs per se necessary to get a decent LSA out on the market. What do you see for this area? What do you think needs to be changed on the regulatory side? How will AOPA be involved, if at all, in the LSA and Sport Pilot segment?
Well, to say that I know enough about that to give a direct comment would be incorrect at the moment. I've been a big supporter of that when I saw it developed a number of years ago, and I think it's a great access. And in many cases, it's all that most people will need to fly and enjoy, you know, a 15-minute flight in the air and have fun and keep costs down. So I'm a big supporter of it. It is up to the individual, however, to make the choice whether that's a stepping stone or if that's all they need and all they want in flying. I do think that when you look at, you know, the value of a used aircraft today, you know, going to 1960s, 172, there are great values out there today in buying an aircraft or renting aircraft or partnering them through a flying club with aircraft. Today I look at the prices of airplanes, the used ones, and they're great values as an all-time opportunity.
Now, going back, though, to LSA and Sport Pilot, the problem everybody seems to have is that, one, too much cost, and two, not enough capability. For instance, why wouldn't the definition cover a Cessna 150, for instance, or other basic airplanes that are, you know, 100, 200 pounds above and beyond what LSA was ultimately established in? Can you see AOPA arguing to broaden the definition of LSA and Sport Pilot in order to make that segment more affordable and more accessible?
I think that anything we can do that makes sense to help grow that pilot population, we want to do. But it won't be our primary platform to be out there trying to redesign airplanes or, you know, increase gross weights and things like that. Our primary opportunity is to say, if this makes sense, if we can do it, we should. And then trying to get this Part 23 change where we can get these certifications moving along on a lot of great upgrades in electronics that are just far superior to the 1960s equipment to reduce, you know, flying costs and investment costs in older aircraft, I think is a real opportunity we can probably drive home much faster.
We're hearing from inside and outside the building at Aviation Way that membership overall has decreased, and in some cases, some of the reports indicate a dramatic decrease over the last 5 years. When Phil left, it was well into the 400,000 range, and membership now, depending on various reports and what you count as a member and so forth and so on, has sunk significantly into the 300,000 range. Some estimates say that membership's down by 25%, and we don't really know about that per se, but a lot of people are talking about, you know, what is happening to the membership, what is happening to the organization. Is the decline in membership something that is of concern to you at this stage of the game, especially just walking in with only a few days time and grade?
Certainly. I mean, and I think you heard me say, Jim, that, you know, I'm evaluating everything that we do and evaluating what I consider the value proposition for being a member. And I'm hopeful that we're going to get our message more clear. And I'm hopeful that by bringing the message to the local airport and by being more visible, that more of the pilot population and enthusiast population wants to stay abreast of what AOPA is doing and believes in the advocacy and, frankly, the value of the magazine, which is terrific, that we can get that trend moving the other direction. That will be something that I expect to do. But it's not going to be membership, or if you would call it, just more subscriptions at any price. It's going to be people that we want to be for here for the long term. And I think our advertisers, our sponsors, our members want us to be genuine, and they want us to be on message and not just trying to raise a number, but a real high-quality number, and that's what I'm interested in.
We've also heard quite a bit of grumbling, and as a matter of fact have been, over the last several years, contacted by folks that have been involved in supporting AOPA financially. Over the last 5 years, AOPA has lost, and apparently, trying to confirm this is a little difficult, but has even lost one of their biggest donors to date. Can AOPA sustain its credibility through this transition and after the 5 years it seems to have rankled so many people to attract the necessary larger donors to be able to fund these initiatives? Or, for that matter, do you really need them?
Well, Jim, I think that's a very interesting question. And I think, you know, individual donors at all levels make a decision based on what they believe they can make a difference on. And mm-hmm. whether they're donating to a PAC or the Safety Institute, I mean, I think those people are making decisions based on what they believe their investment's going to go towards. And one of the opportunities I see is to make that more clear about, you know, our long-term goals and the impact that individual contributors can make in each one of these areas. And, you know, I'm committed to that.
You've been listening to part two of an ANN special report, a conversation with AOPA President and CEO Mark Baker. Join us again for part three, the conclusion of our conversation with Mr. Baker, when the talk turns back to AOPA's past 5 years and forward to a future without an AOPA summit. This special report has been brought to you by Redbird Flight Simulations. I'm Glenn Moyer for the Aero News Network.